Hey marketers, if you want to get the latest news, trends, and insights in marketing, advertising, and tech, check out the Adweek Podcast Network. Learn from leading voices across media and marketing with original shows like Yeah, That's Probably an Ad, Marketing Vanguard, and Tech Magic with Kathy Hackle. Start listening now by searching Adweek wherever you listen to podcasts.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/generate to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/generate. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Hey there, are you ready to elevate your personal brand or company? Meet Viral Growth, your one-stop shop for video content and audience building. Imagine growing your brand organically on social media without the hassle of editing videos for hours. With Viral Growth, it's a breeze. They handle the brainstorming, scripting, and editing while you simply just hit record. And don't worry about your niche. They cater to everyone, from business and marketing to health and wellness. Are you ready to make waves in the social media realm? Visit viralgrowth.io and use code ADWEEK, that's ADWEEK, all lowercase, and get 10% off your plan.
What's up, everybody? I hope you all had an amazing weekend, and I hope you have a great start to your week. We are in for a treat today because we have Chris Tate, who is the Managing Director for Kraut US, which is a really cool full-service digital marketing agency. And we talk about everything from our favorite places to travel to then going into kind of how Kraut helps brands rebrand, reaching new audiences. We go into it all, guys. So if you like social media, if you like hearing about content strategies, if you just want to hang out with us, this is the place for you. So let's get into today's episode with Chris Tate. All right, Chris, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. So before we get into all the cool stuff that you're up to, I want to know, take us back to like childhood, Chris. Like, what were some brands or like marketing and things that you loved growing up? Like, what are some things that like stick out to you?
Yeah, that's a good question. And going back to the nostalgic of growing up. So I used to be really into football, soccer, as you call it in the US. And I feel like some of the brands that really, really stick in my head are the Predator brand from Adidas, which is actually very much back in vogue right now with Jude Bellingham wearing them and these new Predator football boots. So that one to me is just like a very fond memory of wearing a brand and feeling like invincible when I was wearing it.
The shoe, like something about a shoe campaign, like I'm thinking of when he said that, I thought of like immediately like all of David Beckham's like old campaigns, like his H&M ones. Who else? Like right now, like Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce are doing. I don't know what it is, but like shoe ones, they like bring out that like, and it was like, ugh, like I want to be an athlete. I want to be a star. It just like brings out that like you can do anything type of thing with all their branding and marketing.
Yeah. That's like the beauty of all of Nike's ads as well, right? Like they don't actually show you the shoe. They show you what you can do in the shoe. And you just feel like that's incredible and all these amazing accomplishments that athletes are doing, but they're never talking about like the air in the shoe.
Exactly.
That's why it's not great. I love it. But yeah, Beckham was the one that launched those Predator boots super early on. And they had these like spikes on them that like curled the ball more.
Oh, wow.
Just amazing. You just felt like you were Beckham in them.
No, I remember it like, I went through a phase where I was like obsessed with him, and I like even tried out for soccer, and I was like, oh, that's too much running. It didn't make it that far, but I was like, oh, but I look so good in this uniform. But that wasn't going to cut it. Like, I can't just stand on the field in a soccer uniform.
Yeah.
That's not how it works.
No.
but kind of like moving towards more into our like agency focus and stuff. Well, did you study like marketing and that type of stuff, or how did you kind of get interested in this area?
Yeah, no, it's worth going back to where I came from and where I grew up as well. So I grew up in Northumberland, which is in England. It's the most northern county in England. And not only that, I grew up in the most northern town in England, which is called Berwick-upon-Tweed. And it's interesting that that town has changed hands between England and Scotland 13 times. And there's an apocryphal tale that it's apparently it's still at war with Russia because of that. So that's a pretty funny fact about where I'm from. But it's very rural, right? So like most people work in manufacturing and services and farming. And I was a pretty introverted kid from Northumberland. Like I was pretty shy. I grew up on a farm. I like to do good work in school, but I would say that I was also trying to keep in there with the cool kids. So a nice balance. But I was always confident. And in terms of the key moment for me, I think was probably the decision to go to university or college. And I remember like very vividly that I was just thinking to myself, you know, like I'm from this little town. I'll probably just go into like a solid job, like be a police officer or, you know, do something like that. And there was this meeting that was happening in school, which was for university. And I had this like real sliding doors moment where I just thought, why am I not in that meeting? So I ended up going to the meeting, ended up applying for university, ended up in Leeds, which is in Yorkshire. And to what I studied, I did actually study sports marketing. So, you know, back to the predator, love sports. and then marketing, I kind of, you know, I liked how brands showed up in the world. And it, to be honest with you, I was probably a little bit ill-advised on university. I probably wasn't that interested. So I picked something that sounded good. And I think probably a lot of people do that. So that was me. I studied sports marketing and I got into actually my first job out of university was in a gym, like a leisure center with like soccer pitches, tennis courts, squash courts, pools, etc. And I quickly learned that like I didn't want to do that. that's why I studied. And the another big pivotal moment for me was when I realized that I didn't really want to work in sports specifically. I took the opportunity to go traveling around the world. Luckily, again, like one of my friends said, he was going traveling 14 flights over 14 months. And I was like, can I come? And he was like, sure. So 2 or 3 months later, quit my job, went traveling. And honestly, that was a huge, like getting out of your comfort zone moment for me. And I would attribute a lot of where I am today to that experience. You know, being from this kind of small town and meeting like incredible people with experiences and jobs and things that I just thought, like, why can't I do that? That's kind of a little potted history of what I studied. And you know, I guess just before I got into marketing, that's where I ended up.
No, and that's cool that you brought up the point too about like, oh, I got into it and I didn't like it. Cause I feel like a lot of times when a lot of us were like finishing college or finishing whatever, we'll get into it and do something and we're like, oh, but I studied this for 4 years or 2 years or whatever, how long, I got to just like stick at it, or maybe I just will like it later on. And like you being able to be like, no, actually don't. And like pivot. And like, think of that takes a lot of courage. And I feel like a lot of times like people will feel stuck there like, oh, but like, I don't know. And it's like, sometimes it's just like, if you know something's just like not a fit, you have to just like trust your instinct and trust your gut to be like, no, I'm just going to pivot. Like I'll figure something out with it.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. I mean, you know, it's easy in hindsight when you're looking back, but I guess the beauty of that is people have done this before and you can listen to their experiences and understand how they did it, what they did good, what they did bad. But I would say like, just try a lot of things early. Like So my first role in kind of marketing was in a sales capacity. And I really, I was confident that I could do sales really well. Like I'd never done it, but I was like really interested in doing sales. And I've written a lot about why I think starting in sales is an incredible career choice, because you learn a lot about resilience, people, negotiation. And I would recommend people to try their hand in that. But again, you know, this sales was cold calling and it wasn't that fun. but I look back and I was like, wow, I did learn a hell of a lot in that. And so in that role, that's the first one that I got into marketing. And it was, we essentially used to buy domain names. So for example, LasVegasHotel.com. And we had 2,500 of those domain names, everything you can think of. And we used to write 200 words of content, put it on the website, and it would be ranking in Google within 2 weeks, every time, like clockwork. And I was like, wow, what is this world of like Google and marketing and SEO? And we basically used to sell 20 slots to Las Vegas hotels, only 20. So we'd call them up and say, hey, just Google Las Vegas hotel. They'd Google it. I'd be like, click on this website. That's us. And they'd be like, yeah, I'm on it. I'm like, okay, there's only 20 slots. Do you want a slot? And they'd be like, sure. Like it wasn't the easiest. I'm sorry. It wasn't the hardest sell. But that essentially got me into being fascinated with Google and fascinated with marketing, and kind of started my career in media. And I think a lot of people, you know, we're all kind of in it, right? A lot of people fall into marketing and media because it's, you know, when I grew up, it wasn't really a thing at university and no one was really guiding you into marketing. Mm-hmm. So I think it's like, it's very much a calling that I'm so happy I found.
No, and I feel like you brought up a good point too, like how you use like the sales skills. I feel like I always tell people where I'm like, media and anything in the comms realm, anything you do, like, because a lot of people are like, oh, but I want to work for an agency, but I don't understand like how my experience working at this local restaurant or working a retailer, that's going to help me. And I always tell people all the skills and stuff I learned from working at like Apple and other various companies, like in retail, I still use those skills to this day. And I feel like a lot of people, especially like when you're younger and you like, say you can't get an internship and you're working somewhere else that might not be in your field or interest, those skills that you use, something in there is going to be transferable to whatever you do, whether that be you wanting to continue working in an agency or maybe work for a nonprofit, something in that field that you do. So I always tell people like hone in and like tune in to be like, okay, I'm learning social skills. Like you said, like I'm learning able to like work with people. I'm cold calling. Like that's another form of networking. And it's like, you kind of really have to like tap in and be like, okay, these are the skills that are going to help me with the next project or the next thing that I do.
Yeah. Yeah, I completely agree. And it's hard when you're doing it and you're in it to realize that. But even to your point there, looking back to university, when I went to university, again, pretty shy kid. The first time I landed in the city I was going to university in was the first time I went to that city. And like my parents dropped me off and I was like, cool, I guess we're doing this. I remember having to stand up in front of huge lecture halls with all of the students, you know, and these are like super confident kids from London, and present to them. And I was like really scared of it. And that is my job now. Like, and I honestly look back at that as a form of experience and just getting over the fear and practicing speaking to multiple audiences. And now I like really, really enjoy it. I still get nervous and I still get those butterflies before I go on a stage or I do a thing, but I really enjoy it. And I used to hate it. So it's, yeah, you do look back at those moments of through the jobs that you do, through the experiences you have, like you are constantly learning and should, you know, I don't think anyone's worked it out by the time they're 30. No, so like just do as much as you can.
when you said like your parents dropping you off, in my head, I pictured like you getting out the car with all your stuff and Party in the USA playing. We're like, hopped off the plane at Elliot. I just picture you like, like, do you ever, and speaking of like speaking in front of people, I know this always comes up where people are like, how do you gain the confidence or like, how do you deal with nerves? And like you said, like nobody has that figured out by the time they're 30 or whatever. Do you have like a ritual or anything that you do before you speak to kind of help with nerves? I feel like that always comes up in a lot of people like talk about them doing something to like figure that out, but do you have a ritual?
I do. I don't know if it's like super special, but you know what I do is, so I've got a young daughter now, and I walk her to daycare in the mornings, and I found so much greatness in just practicing to her in the morning. She can't even speak properly yet. I just like, you know, practice my script to her as I'm walking to daycare in the morning. You know, I keep speaking, I keep doing it. And that's a huge factor in like feeling really confident when you get there. And, you know, I used to do that kind of like in front of the mirror or to my wife, but it's just so much more fun when you do it or you can't speak. And honestly, like the big thing when you get on stage, and I remember someone told me this once and it stuck with me, is say your first sentence really slow. And I was like, why? He's like, because you're going to get up there, your heart's going to be racing, and you're going to start speaking really fast, and you're not going to be able to get out of it and snap out of it. So just when you get up, say your first sentence really slowly, and it sets the tone. And I was like, that is a great piece of advice.
No, that's so true. Because when he said that, I immediately thought of like all the TED Talks and different things I've listened to, and they always will be like, apples are fruit. And I'm like, wow, groundbreaking. Did not know this information.
Yeah. The other thing is, the other thing is just practice. Honestly, like practice. Because the more times you said it out loud, the easier it is. And if you just say it in your head, it's not the same. It's really not the same. So you know, whether it be like pitching at work right now, we do multiple practice rounds, and then by the time we get there, everyone feels really confident in what they're saying.
No, that's really good advice, and that's something that I try to also like in the morning in the mirror, like tell myself in the mirror, and then also like I tell people where I'm like, honestly, people in there, they're gonna be listening to the first thing you say and the last thing you say. So if you mess up in the middle, like nobody's gonna remember. So kind of like what you said, like just make sure you have a good opener, a good closer, and then like wear some fun socks or something to like be an engagement or something if people get distracted.
I like that. You know what? Another thing is, Colin, like practicing storytelling is a really good skill to have. And there's a loads of different ways that you can do that, right? Like you can watch videos of Kurt Vonnegut and how he tells these story arcs. You can get different courses. You can go on webinars, seminars. And I just think like tuning into how you can construct a story is a really, really important attribute to have. You know, you can go into a presentation and you want to speak to a bunch of people and you have loads to say and that's interesting stuff. But it can all fall really flat if you don't like build up some suspense, you know, go down to the doldrums of like terribleness and then build up again and everyone wins at the end. So there's like learning these story arcs, which is really cool, like Man in a Hole or Boy Meets Girl. And actually, if you go back and listen to a podcast on film scripts and how films were made, they use these story arcs.
Yeah, you can't just be like, so there's this lady, and then like walk away. Like, well, who is this lady? Is she a baker? Is she a lawyer? You can't do that. You can't just do that and walk away.
No.
I kind of now want to shift gears to hear about like what your current role is and kind of like what Crowd is and like a little bit about like what you do in your day to day.
Sounds great. So yeah, I am the managing director here at Crowd. I have been with the business for 12 years now. Which is only a few months after it was founded in 2011, which is interesting in itself. You know, we can get into a little bit about why I've been here for 12 years and what keeps you somewhere that long. But in that time, it's gone from 5 people to over 500 people. I founded the US business alongside the CEO and a few other people in 2016, and we're now about 100 people in New York. So it's been really fun. I led the agency from 0 clients, managing $0 of media spend to over, you know, hundreds of millions of media. Clients we're really proud of, like Chime, General Electric, Nespresso, Amazon. You know, it feels really good to be part of the conversation and shaping those brands and how they show up to consumers. So my day-to-day in the role is very much be out there, be networking, be making Crowd famous, and you know, bringing people into the agency from a recruitment perspective is a big part of my job, and really just getting out there and selling Crowd as a great media agency for clients to work with. But yeah, been here for 12 years. I think it's worth touching on a few of the things that have kept me here, because I think these are things that people should look out for in companies and in roles, or certainly very important to me. And hopefully that means it's important to other people. So one of the things is growth. And I say that from personally and professionally. It's the most important thing of all for me, right? In the sense of if the business that you're working for is consistently growing, it's going to create opportunity and that's going to create personal growth for you if you grasp it. You know, I could not work in a business that wasn't growing. It doesn't compute with me. And that doesn't mean it's bad, right? Like you can have very cool companies that do cool work and they constantly do that, but they're not growing. To me, that is not something that I look for. I want to see growth and I want to see progression, and progression leads to change, and I love change. So the second thing is reinvention. It's like appetite, honestly, like a real appetite for change. Sometimes change is scary, right? Like you have a job and you do that job and you're really comfortable in it, and then something happens and you have to do something different. I honestly love that environment and thrive in that environment because life is too short to be doing the same thing all the time. And I just think that it creates new opportunities for people and companies and the world, that things are changing all the time. And the last thing I'll say before pausing is a good manager, probably more than the brand or the company that you work for, is a good manager. And, you know, choose the manager of the company. I think like if you get a good one, they'll make sure that you grow and develop and learn and enjoy, and they have to mold with you, right? Because I've had managers in the past that are just not my style, where they might micromanage or tell me to do things, whereas I like to be told where I need to go and then let me figure it out. So I think that's a really interesting point as well.
Hey there, podcast fam. Are you ready to break free from the social media rut? Hold on to your hats because we've got just the thing for you. Meet Viral Growth, your one-stop shop for leveling up your online presence. Whether you're a personal brand or a company, they've got the tools and know-how to take you to the next level. With Viral Growth, forget about those endless hours of video editing. They handle everything from brainstorming to polishing your content so you can just focus on being awesome. And guess what? We're hooking you up with a sweet deal. Use code ADWEEK for 10% off when you sign up. Ready to take your social media game to the next level? Head on over to viralgrowth.io and let's turn those digital dreams into a reality.
My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big MQL man. Then he just kept saying things like, the more MQLs, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means marketing qualified lead. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the MQL man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/generate to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/generate. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
No, and you brought up a good point, too, about being open to change. Like, I feel like our industry, media, agent, stuff's constantly changing, and especially when you're working with the brands and stuff, we're coming to you to be like, hey, how do we stay with the current? How do we stay on top of the wave? So it's like if you're stuck in your ways and you're not attuned to everything that's going on, you kind of can't do your job. And for clients and stuff, we're looking to you to help them, like whether it's reaching younger audiences or just like a rebrand or like just doing different things. You can't do that to your fullest if you're not constantly kind of like staying in the know.
Yeah. Yeah, being too rigid in your thinking and the way that you do things in media and marketing is a trap. And I think, you know, you can have a really good proposition and a way of doing things and you become famous for it. And then you stop innovating because you're famous for it. And that's like a trap because you can quickly become obsolete in this environment. And I think that's like why I love marketing and media. You know, if someone were to say to me, is it a good career choice? I would say it depends what motivates you. But I found a lot of fulfillment and a lot of enjoyment in this industry because of change that I mentioned. But to your point as well, because of like innovation, products, regulation, technologies, cultural expectations, like you're constantly having to try and match to things that are happening in the real world. and then translating that to how a brand can show up in the real world. And to me, that's like right at the heart of like the culture and living and everything that's happening. And maybe that's a little self-serving because we work in media, but I find value in that. I feel like I'm doing good work for a reason, and that's what's important.
And like when you also made me think of like when brands are like first approaching you all to do something, like is there initial conversation that you all kind of have before you start getting to work on it? So I feel like a lot of times brands will be like, we just want to go viral. We just want to reach the new generation. We just like, is there kind of, what's that like first step that you all try to do to kind of help get to the root of like, okay, these are the tangible things that we're going to do before we figure out how you go viral or reach Gen Alpha or Gen Z? Like, what's that first conversation?
Yeah. I think two things. So one is easier and less tangible is more like, is this going to be a good partnership? Like, do they believe in the things we believe in as a brand? You know, Crowd has a lot of values and ways that we show up in the market. And if brands are attracted to that, we really want to work with them. If brands have a different idea of how they should do things or how they should run a campaign, and we just fundamentally don't agree with that, that's something we want to get out really quickly, right at the front, right? Because if we take the business, if we win them, and the team just hates working on it, that's just not a good thing. And then even though it could be a really cool brand and they want to do some cool viral stuff, like, doesn't work out. The second thing is just expectations on what they're trying to achieve, to your point. Not just go viral and, you know, be famous or whatever it is, but actually money. Like, what are you trying to achieve in terms of results, KPIs, the end goal in 2 years? Like, how have we been successful? And that stuff, like trying to pull it out of people, because if you don't get that, then you get into these relationships and misaligned incentives, and nobody knows what they're actually trying to achieve, even though they know the work they're trying to do. And that's really dangerous for like a service-based industry where we have to deliver a result at the end of it.
Yeah, because I feel like a lot of times in stuff like brands and stuff will come to agencies and marketers and be like, we just want something big. We just want something this. And it's like, okay, but what does success look like to you? What are your, like you said, what are your KPIs? Like, how are you measuring this? And they're like just seeing the bigger picture and comparing themselves to like other brands, but they're not you saying the right things to the agencies and marketers that are trying to help them, being like, okay, well, how do you want us to like measure this? Like, how are we going to look at it? Like, what is the long-term goal that you're trying to accomplish here? Not just the like quick viral moment or that quick whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, these viral moments and creator strategies can be really, really impactful. But without the larger kind of umbrella of what the brand is and what they're trying to do, you can have that moment of fame and then you're gone because you haven't got the supporting brand and the supporting media and the supporting press to sustain it. And a lot of brands did really well over the last, I guess, like 4 or 5 years, like pandemic related and micro influencer related, and, you know, really diving into that way of marketing has been very successful for some brands. But then eventually they kind of reach this plateau of like, how do they take it further than just being a viral micro influencer brand? So we try to work with companies on that level from like a holistic media planning, buying perspective, and not just all digital either, right? Like, how can we show up in the real world on screens around New York City or on billboards on I-95? Like, you know, it's really trying to dig into where that audience is and how the brand will show up. You know, if it's a trucking brand, we're probably going to want to be on these billboards on these highways. Mm-hmm. It's not just being viral on TikTok.
And I kind of want to, like, bringing that up, I kind of want to delve a little bit deeper. For brands and stuff that are, like, looking to you all to specifically, like, reach, like, Gen Z and, like, Gen Alpha now, like, which is now being, like, now a big thing. What are some ways that, like, agencies like you all that help them kind of, like, reach that target audience? Like, what's kind of that, like, step-by-step process look like? Like, are you guys looking at, like, creating, like, a target demo first? Or kind of how does that conversation flow?
Yeah, that's great question. So there's a few elements to this. I think the ultimate way it shows up in culture and in media is a lot of the time through through creators. I think whether that's UGC content or it's more polished content with celebrities, like it's really about like what audience. So what influencer creator is going to resonate with that young audience. And you know, that can change a lot of the time. You get superstars, of course, like D'Amelio's or something like that, that are constantly doing a really good job in that environment, and people want to see their content and people trust their recommendations. But there are also, that is also changing a lot as well. So I think one of the campaigns that we did recently in New York City, like New York City actually, was around blood donations and trying to engage a younger and new audience to donate blood. There's a shortage of blood in New York City. You know, giving blood can save 3 lives. Like, there's a lot of amazing things that happen when you give blood. But donations were declining. Younger audiences don't even, you know, you don't really think about this when you're younger. So one of the big strategies there was to, number one, we partnered with a chocolate brand and created a chocolate bar that kind of was a little bit viral. And then in the same way that you do those product drops for sneakers, for example, it was like a product drop for a chocolate bar. And it engaged the younger audience to want to get this like premium chocolate bar that was only made if you donated blood. And by the way, I did it last week and I got it. It was delicious.
Oh, wow.
First time I've ever donated blood. And it was that kind of campaign with creators and influencers in health, in wellness, that really engaged with this younger audience to actually, you know, make them stand up and go. And I think we got, it was like 1,200 new Gen Z to go and donate blood. So it's that kind of thing, like tapping into, these people that will really engage, but also creating partnerships and product drops and things like that, that these audiences are used to in a cool brand that they want to aspire to as well.
Yeah. And I feel like, right, you brought up a good point too. Like, I feel like a really thing that a lot of people are like now honing in on post pandemic is really creating these like in-person cool activation moments to, regardless of reaching like younger generations, but people all together, because people like want a community. They want to feel that like moment and that experience compared to like something they can see and scroll online. They want to kind of be there and like feel it. Like you said, like that chocolate bar was something you could only get if you donated blood, and like could get in that moment. That's like an experience that people can't get, like, I don't know, as like a token on like Roblox or something. Yeah. They want something they can see and feel. And I feel like a lot of brands are really still like leaning into that if they can make something like in person compared to like a digital drop or just something virtual. Like, they're really leaning into kind of putting a lot of effort into those like moment type experiences.
Yeah. I totally agree with that. In the analog world, I also think it's worth, interesting to explore one point that you mentioned there around ownership and feeling like you own something around the brand or the thing that you want to buy, right? Like, rather than just buy the Nike sneaker, can the brand give you something that you actually feel like you own? Because when you own something, you care more. And have you ever heard of the Bowie bond? David Bowie.
I know the artist. I don't know the bond.
So this is like something that I only heard about the other day. But in 1997, David Bowie raised $55 million from investors to buy his back catalog of music. And he promised income to those investors from future gigs and royalties on that music. So he essentially created a 10-year bond with the underlying asset, his music. And the bond delivered over 8% every year to those investors for the next 10 years. And I was like, that is kind of like a little bit like the NFT craze, right, of recent past, where you like own something and you get returned money. But I was thinking like, wow, why aren't more brands doing that kind of thing where they give ownership of something that they've created to investors and raise some money? And you can see a world where like, I guess like Mr. Beast kind of does it, but maybe Mr. Beast could publicly float the Mr. Beast brand, raise loads of money, and give investors like share that wealth and create wealth for loads of different people. And it was just a really interesting concept that I learned about in David Bowie, right, ahead of his time in many different things, including predicting the internet and how crazy it would be. But in the future, I do see these brands that are created from creators, publicly listed, that people want to work for, and potentially, honestly, their own media companies as well, right? We've seen it with Gary Vaynerchuk, with VaynerMedia. I honestly like Mr. Beast, hundreds of people working for him, basically a media company. Mm-hmm. And in the future, I see Gen Alpha very attracted to work for those type of media companies and not maybe Crowd or maybe WPP or maybe Dentsu. Like, how are we going to attract that talent in the future versus a Mr. Beast?
No, and that's so true. You brought up a good point, because I know like a lot of creators that I've like talked to and talent managers for these creators, they're really encouraging them to not just like say if they're in the beauty or lifestyle space, not just like do these clubs with these cool brands, but like also like create their own like sense of ownership, whether it be like their own cosmetic company or like say if they're into books, like their own like independent publisher or something. They're really encouraging them to kind of like with more of this entrepreneurial spirit versus like I feel like the early 2000s and 10s that we saw a lot of the creators where they're like, oh, I'll just do this collab. And then that was kind of it. And they kind of just stayed in that space. But we're now seeing a sense of like, once we're like, no, I want my own like media company, I want my own like business. I want my own kind of like piece of the pie versus like just like helping everybody else do theirs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's actually incredible. I mean, it's a very exciting job landscape to grow up in, right? Where you can create whatever you want. It's also scary. It's not like everyone can be Mr. Beast. It's tough, very tough. I'm sure these people work incredibly hard to get the brands that they've created. But I think someone always tells me like, if you had 1,000 fans paying you $10 a month, you have a business.
Yeah. Like you're good. Wait, speaking of which, if you were a creator, like what space would you occupy?
Oh, that is a great question. Oh my God. Oh, so completely adjacent to, sorry, like non-related to my job.
Yeah, it could be anything.
I think I would do architecture.
Oh, okay.
You know, like I watch them on YouTube. It's like tiny homes.
I'm obsessed with tiny homes.
Like basically, maybe I would be the person that like goes and understands how they built this and how they live in it. And I do the YouTube and like.
I endorse. No, I'm obsessed like tiny house hunters. I watch all of those. I don't want to live in one, but I'm obsessed with the concept. Like, I went to school in the Austin, Texas area, and I remember when we had like the first like tiny home neighborhood, and I thought they were just so. I thought it was just like that whole row. So I support it if that's what you want to do. I support it.
That's great. I watch one on YouTube. So when I go on flights, sometimes I just download YouTube videos to watch on the flight. And I watched the tiny home in Japan with an artist, whereas living room was outside. Oh, I was like, wait, what? And this TV was kind of like, it was outside, but it was protected. It was so bizarre.
Wait, I'm obsessed. I love tiny homes. I support this. So if you want to start that, in Q4, you have my support.
All right. Keep an eye out. Tiny homes YouTube.
And for my last question, for those who are listening, to kind of like wrap up what we said, where we were talking about like a lot of great advice and stuff. If a brand's list for the brands that are listening, what advice would you give them for kind of like wanting to work with like a Crowd or somebody who's like looking to say like, oh, we want to build this campaign, we want to do this, like what advice would you ask them to have in mind before kind of approaching you all to create their new marketing plan or marketing idea and concept? Like, is there something, whether it's like their storyline or their mission, like what's something that you would want them to know before approaching somebody like you guys?
Good question. I think a few of the things that we really want a brand is just a good brief. And it doesn't have to have all of the questions, all of the answers, all of the information, because that's why you're coming to us to get the solution. but just an understanding of like what you want to do here. Because when it's really unstructured and you don't even know what you want to do, then it just leads to work that is not good on either side of, you know, on either side, because everyone's guessing what someone wants. So I think the key thing is just a brief, and it can be a page, it can be 10 pages, it can be, you know, it just needs to be written down so you've actually processed your thoughts of why you're asking an agency to do something. And honestly, that respect goes a long, long way for getting people like us to work very hard for you. If it's a bit muffly and unclear, it just doesn't really motivate us to work hard for you. So I would say that's the key differentiator. Like, we really want to work hard for you, but give us a good brief.
Yeah, I feel like if you don't even know like what you want to do, and like people can't, it's like, help us help you. It's like, you got to have like some sense of idea instead of just being like, well, that's what they're here for. They're to like, it's like, no, you got, people can't help if you don't give them an idea or like sense of like what you're trying to get help with. Like, there's nowhere to start.
No, yeah, there's no, and honestly, there are some services and agencies like the strategy side where you can give people, you know, here's our mission, here's where we're trying to go. Can you give us a plan for X, Y, and Z? And that those people thrive in that kind of environment. So there are scenarios where it happens, but don't go and say, hey, all we care about is return on ad spend. We want to launch in 15 markets. Give us a plan.
It's like,
no. This is not fun.
But Chris, thank you so much. This was so good, and we appreciate all the gems and knowledge you dropped on us today.
Of course, it's been a pleasure. Always fun to catch up.
Wow, how great was this episode? If you were like me, you probably took a lot of notes and have a lot of questions and comments. So if you do, feel free to add us at Adweek across Twitter, Instagram, all the social medias. And we'd love to hear from you all. And feel free to give us a rating on Apple Podcasts. That always helps us. And we can't wait to hear from you all and see you in the next episode. So bye, everybody.
Thank you for listening to Young Influentials, part of the Adweek Podcast Network and Acast Creator Network. This podcast was produced by Al Manarino, executive produced by Chris Ahrens, and edited by Lane McGibney at Bountiful Studios. You can listen and subscribe to all Adweek's podcasts by visiting adweek.com/podcasts. Stay updated on all things Adweek Podcast Network by following us on Twitter at Adweek Podcast. And if you have a question or suggestion for the show, send us an email at podcast@adweek.com.
Hey there, podcast fam. Are you ready to break free from the social media rut? Hold on to your hats, because we've got just the thing for you. Meet Viral Growth, your one-stop shop for leveling up your online presence. Whether you're a personal brand or a company, they've got the tools and know-how to take you to the next level. With Viral Growth, forget about those endless hours of video editing. They handle everything from brainstorming to polishing your content, so you can just focus on being awesome. And guess what? We're hooking you up with a sweet deal. Use code ADWEEK for 10% off when you sign up. Ready to take your social media game to the next level? Head on over to viralgrowth.io and let's turn those digital dreams into a reality.